Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
You're about to go off on an adventure, aren't you?
Adventure. Yes, I am. I'm having an adventure right now, too, because I went to the eye doctor this morning, and they dilated my pupils, and like when I look in the mirror, I look like a demon.
Ah.
Fun times.
You should get some, I can take some pictures, because you'll get a really good red eye that way.
Yeah, I can read again now, which is great, because for, you know, an hour or so there afterwards, like, yeah, everything's really blurry.
It's been ages since I had my eyes dilated. I have more advanced eye doctors than you, apparently.
Mm.
They have wacky machines now. Oh. Yeah, they have machines that do all that, like that don't require dilation.
Oh, Magic Land. Yeah,
California, I guess.
I guess. Well, it's like, I don't know, I hear that sometimes for people who have like dentists, and like, oh, your dentist still uses non-lasers or something like that. Uh-huh. And it's like, what? Lasers?
Yeah.
That's a thing? Mm. So, I don't know. Yeah, I go in once every year and a half or so just because I have some... I don't have any, like, my eyes are fine, but, like, I have, like, some risk factors, so they just like to keep an eye on things.
And some risk fasters that could increase the speed of it.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Too fast, too risky.
I play a lot of Risk, is what I'm saying.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Risk Legacy.
Indeed.
Get a sticker on
your eye. Never finish that game. One day.
Maybe.
I was just reading, I know there's a lot going on, but I was just reading... Is there? One of our former colleagues over at TechHive, there's a name we don't throw around that much.
I have their bag.
There was a review of, so IKEA teamed up with Sonos to make these speakers, which are coming out, I think, next month.
Uh-huh.
Michael Brown had a review of them. So I was looking at those because they've got a lamp and it looks like it's a lamp with a Sonos speaker in it, which looks kind of crazy. But at the same time, I feel like, that is like I am on board for that. I like that they're merging those things together. And for me, the appeal of it was it's a Sonos speaker, so it works with my Sonos speakers,
right?
And it doesn't have a microphone in it, and that is good because then I can use it in the bedroom where microphones have been banned.
Yes,
and I can listen. So I often go in there and I just need to like. You know, I'm folding laundry or something, and I just want to listen to something, and I don't have a good speaker in there, so I have to, like, jack up the one from the kitchen so I can hear it. And so this has a lamp and a speaker, which really seems like it's ideal. And I think they also support AirPlay 2, so that really, that's like a win in my book.
Yeah, looks kind of like a jellyfish.
It does look a little nutty, but I don't think it looks terrible.
It's IKEA. No, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah, so I was glad to see the review was pretty solid. So I'm going to have to pick one of those up, though it sounds like they're not available until August, which is rapidly approaching.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I thought about it. They have a three-device wireless charger, induction charger, Qi charger, mm-hmm. I guess. And I thought about picking one of those up just because we currently have two kind of discs. Laying on our counter, and I thought that it might be nice to have a single thing there instead of two separate things, but it's not really a high priority, and I haven't been to IKEA in a while, and it just hasn't happened.
Since we bought Kat a iPhone 8 the other week, she now has wireless charging capability in that phone, so I was thinking I should get her a pad because I feel like oftentimes the cables lead to things getting knocked off the nightstand.
Yep.
So I was like, wouldn't it be much easier if you could just put your phone down and have a charge? Because I've got one of the Studio Neat ones that has like you can put in your watch charger and it has like a charging pad.
Right.
Which I like. I like having the dual charging thing there. And it's because of the fact that it's got like its little stand for the watch. You can use the watch in nightstand mode still. And technically it has another, you can like run a lightning cable in there and have like a second dock as well, but I don't have anything that needs to get plugged in there, so but it's a nice little product, and because you know, air power is not happening, it seems like one of the better options out there.
I don't leave my phone by my bedside.
I know,
so
that's right.
I find those docks uninteresting.
It's just, sure, that's fair. That's
I just
fair.
Don't do that. I realize I'm an outlier, apparently, where everybody has their phone right next to their head while they sleep, but I don't.
You do you, man.
I don't do that. It's in another place, far off. Well, not that far. My house isn't that big, but it's in a different location.
In another land.
In another land, in a magical land. So I had a funny thing happen to me last week, which is we were doing this forthcoming D&D Fit podcast thing on Saturday. Just way to forward promote it there. Forthcoming D&D podcast with a bunch of people you might know. And last week I decided to take the plunge into Catalina full time, more or less. But I did a good thing, which is I, of course, made a clone of my existing Mojave setup on an external drive so that I had Mojave to boot into for podcast work, let's say, because most of the audio tools are broken, but like other for when I need things to work, essentially.
Right.
But that didn't go well, it turns out. And it was a funny thing. I actually talked to Dave Nanian, who writes Super Duper, to get some idea about what might have happened. But basically, I used a drive that was acting as my backup drive. And so I decided, well, I could reformat it, but I might as well just leave it as it is, because then the backups will be there too, and that gives me extra protection. And this was a mistake, because my backup drive was not an APFS drive.
Oh, no.
So I cloned my boot drive, which was an encrypted APFS drive, to a non-encrypted HFS Plus drive.
This sounds vaguely familiar. I feel like I had some run-ins like this when I was doing the whole Mac Mini ordeal.
Yeah, so it turns out then when you try to boot onto that drive, what you get is this infinite loop where it says, I can't boot to this, but I could install software that lets me boot to it. And you say, okay, and it thinks for about 2 seconds and it says, no, I can't do that either. And when you go to the startup disk preference pane thing that's in the recovery, because you're booted into recovery at this point, right? It's intercepted your boot and is taken you to a weird place. It shows that drive, the Mojave drive, as encrypted, which it isn't.
Oh, no.
Dave says what's really happening here is that there is an invisible recovery that is encrypted, and there's a mismatch.
Huh.
Because the system, I mean, the short version of it is, whatever the details actually are, the short version of it is my Mojave system thinks it's on an encrypted APFS drive, and it's not, and it gets very confused. So here was my solution, and I am speaking to you from within Mojave now, so the happy ending. It all
deep
worked.
Deep within Mojave.
It all worked, although I'm going to have to do a lot of work to make the D&D thing on Saturday functional, because everything broke on Saturday morning. It was really great. The solution was I open Disutility, or no, I... Is that it? No, I think I can just do this from Super Duper. I opened Super Duper and said, hey, Super Duper, I'm going to be cloning that content to a disk image on my server because it's a terabyte and I don't have enough free space because I only have a terabyte internal anyway. I'm gonna be cloning that to a disk image on my server. And then I wipe the external and make it an AFS disk. And then I clone the contents of that disk image on my server back to the external.
Oof.
Now I've got all my files on an AFS disk and it boots. So that's what it took. That's the answer. Is kids, if you're going to make a bootable Mojave backup of your system for when you go to Catalina, either in the beta or in the final, wipe that disk and make it AFS encrypted, I think. And just, yeah, it was, it was a happy ending, but it was not good before that. It was not good.
Yeah. That, you know, disk formats, man, like it's great. It's great that they're there, but you know, the more that we get away from those and abstract out of them, I feel like for most of us, the better life, you know, will become. And I think that's kind of what APFS was shooting for, right? Was
Or yeah, AFS. You know, I've said AFS a bunch of times.
Yes, right.
If you'd
like
to get a foreign exchange student, that's what you do. But otherwise, you do APFS, which is short for Apple File System, because AFS was taken, so it's app.
It's not
AppFISIS. AppFISIS. Boot into AppFISIS.
Advanced Placement File System.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was somebody, because somebody in a room that you and I were both in was talking about something, doing something with APFS and mentioning, like, you could turns out it's like a lot easier to resize stuff. You were talking about this a little bit too.
Yeah.
I saw somebody else though as well. Like, a lot of people were marveling over, wow, APFS makes all those things that used to be a huge pain with HFS Plus and actually makes them pretty easy. But we're still a little bit in that transition period where
HFS
Plus is so old.
We're all trained to do stupid things because of HFS Plus. Even though we don't need to now,
right,
because we're not in HFS Plus anymore. So my Mojave is not encrypted. It's just an APFS volume external, and it boots, and it's fine. But the APFS being lacking was the real story there. So
right.
So thanks to Dave. Dave actually came up with something that I'm going to put in my book about photos, which was great, which has been making the rounds, and I'll mention it here. I think ATP mentioned it last week. And the idea is, so people get frustrated because if you use photos and you have it set to dynamically store data locally. So basically it's storing everything with iCloud Photo, and then what's happening in on your disk determines what gets deleted and what gets saved, because it's all up in the cloud. And that's a setting. You can turn it off and have every single photo in your library be local, which I have on my server, but I don't have on my iMac because I don't have enough room. The problem with this is that I believe the way the algorithm works is it waits until you've got 10% disk free, and then it starts purging. And I don't think, and I don't know if this is different in Catalina, but I'm not sure that if you get down to zero disk free, if Photos is like dynamically throwing things overboard, it might be. But it really isn't doing maintenance until you tick over this thing. So if you suddenly need to copy a giant amount of data, you may find yourself in a position where you're frustrated that there's this Photos stuff in the way. Anyway, some of this is people want to take control of their storage in a way that Apple thinks they don't.
Right.
And Apple's probably not wrong that most people don't. And it's nerds who are saying, I want to control the storage. And Apple's like, look, if you don't do anything, we will control the storage for you. There's this whole concept in macOS now about purgeable stuff. And the system will start deleting things that it has a backup of in the cloud that it can get later if it needs to. But that all said, it makes people uncomfortable that Photos libraries can grow out of control with no method to, there's no button to press in Photos that says, why don't you purge the photo?
Right.
No, it doesn't work that way. So Dave Nanian pointed out to the ATP guys, what you do if you've got an APFS disk is make a new APFS space sharing partition, because one of the things you can do in APFS is just make more partitions, and you don't have to even set a size. They all share the same space. They dynamically resize. Your disk is only the one size, but you can have different partitions, and they all just share that space and take it as they need it, which is fascinating.
Yeah.
But you can set a limit on the size of a partition and say, I never want it to be more than this. So, for example, you could make one called Photos that was only 150 gigabytes.
Yeah.
And put your photo iCloud syncing default Photos library in that partition instead of on your main drive. And what that means is now it's never going to get bigger than its partition. And you've done it. You have put a hard cap on your photo library. And when it reaches that point where it's 10% away from being full, it's going to do everything it needs to do to get it to fit inside that partition, because it will never grow beyond that. And you've had to do nothing, because it's APFS. You can just make new partitions and nobody cares. So very smart idea. Very, 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 very smart idea. And it shows you how cool APFS can be. If get over your hangups, which I absolutely have, where I am terrified that if I touch anything in disk utility on my current disk, I risk everything dying and being terrible. Yeah, yep.
Years and years of all that,
right?
All that ingrown
right?
fear.
And it used
right?
to be the disk utility would say, like, oh, no, I can do this. And you'd be like, okay, I'll try it. And it's like, oh, no. It like sits there for hours and comes back and your disk is destroyed or whatever. And it's like, so apparently I have embraced it now. There's a Photos partition, which is funny because in Catalina there's a Photos partition, there's also a system partition because that's how that works. So there's all sorts of hidden APFS partitions that are on the system there.
The system's all like write only now, or read only, write only. That would be great. You can't read it, you can only write to it.
Yep. Good luck. I can sign this data to the depths of the sea and we'll see what happens later. Yes, and in fact that leads to a funny thing.
I had a feeling
Catalina.
we would head there shortly because I've seen some of your
I'm withholding some of my rants, but I did write a couple of tweets on Twitter about this that were pretty negative, but I'm gonna start with a funny thing about Catalina, which is, so one of the things that you may know from Mac OS X from the earliest days is that even though there's a user folder and there's a user applications folder, nobody really uses it. What people do is they use slash applications, root level applications.
Right.
It's one of the few things in OS X or Mac OS that happens at the root level and rather than your user folder. One of the very few things. And it's just sort of grown that way. In Catalina, as far as I can tell, your apps are still in slash applications, which I think is actually kind of funny. They could have been more aggressive about sort of like moving it. But the idea there is you've got shared applications between different users of your system. It's got to be there. However, all of the stock Apple apps that ship with the system, including utilities, but also all the just regular apps that ship that are not part of the App Store, they're part of the system. Well, the system is read-only. So what do you do about those apps? And the answer is those apps are all in whatever slash system slash volumes or it's what slash system slash volumes or slash volume slash system.
Yeah. Slash volume slash system.
Yeah. It's this, they're on that alternate data partition that's virtually mounted inside your existing partition. They're all in there, and they're all hard-linked to slash applications individually.
Right.
So what this means is that if you command-delete on Notes, do you know what happens?
Nothing.
Beep. You can't delete it. And I can't wait for the breathless story from some annoying Apple blog or anti-Apple blog that says, oh no, now applications aren't deletable on the Mac, just like they used to be not deletable on iOS. By the way, they're still not deletable on iOS. You just hide them. They're still there.
Also, only some of them are deletable on iOS too. Like, you can't get rid of Safari.
Yeah, exactly. So, but it is a funny little side effect of this, that they're on that read-only volume, so you can't get rid of them. They're there. And that means you can't modify them, and malware can't modify them, and they're going to run untouched. But it is a wacky little quirk that some of those apps are not actually in slash applications. They're somewhere else, and it's on that read-only volume. It's just weird. It's just weird. And then my other issues that I was reading about are about all the warnings that get thrown up when you try to open apps that aren't notarized or just regular old apps, and it says, oh, this app wants to look at your desktop. And I have a whole rant that I may or may not do depending on what the final version of Catalina is. But, like, I will tell you, I think it's Apple's trying to protect the general user from bad apps. I get it. At the same time, desktop documents, like, I don't know. Those are places where stuff happens on my Mac.
Right.
And
sure.
I have apps. And constantly asking me every time I open a new app, can this app look at the desktop? It's ridiculous. Like, yes, it's the desktop. Apps should be able to look at files on the desktop. And I believe that actually quite strongly, that I should be able as a user, at the very least, to say at a security prompt somewhere, you know what? My desktop is a free-for-all.
Right. Give access to all
I
apps.
I don't care what apps look at my desktop. I literally do not care. And Apple wants you to give approval for every single one of those. It's like all the stuff last year about like microphones and
cameras. Every year there's more, there are more prompts. And again, I think we both agree that it's worthwhile being cautious about these things and asking for permission, you know, is for positive permission is good because the alternatives are apps using these. You know, in iOS and 13 and iPad OS, I have been truly I have been amazed about the number of apps, for example, that ask for Bluetooth access, which is also now controlled. And so you'll open apps and be like, and it's like, this wants to use Bluetooth. I'm like, why? What's your deal?
Most of them are, they've got Chromecast in them, but some of them are like, they've got maybe there's a tracker or maybe not. Who knows what's going on there?
Right.
So surreptitious location tracking.
Again, it's one of those things where it's good to ask for it, but you know, there are cases in which you do want a little more, not exactly fine grain control, broader grain control, if anything, over access. I mean, like, you know, for example, Unix systems on which Mac OS and many other OSs are based have always had a permission system built in terms of what users could access. And so moving this to what apps can access is kind of like a slightly orthogonal model to that. But you do have the ability, like in traditional Unix permissions, to be like, let everybody look at this folder, for example. And so you know what you need is something a little analogous, which is like, let every app look at this folder. It's fine. And I think file system in general seems to be kind of a special case there. And I know that's one of the places that was a big challenge, because in the sandbox system, you know, apps that required, famously of course, BBEdit, for example, right, an app that needs to do a lot of stuff with files on your disk, there were issues with that when the Mac App Store first came out in terms of what would be accessible and what things would be allowed to do. And now there is a full disk access permission in the security pane, and so I mean, it's good.
The
problem, it's good to be cautious,
but
you can't overdo it.
The problem is now it's everything, not just Mac App Store apps.
Right,
like
exactly.
Every app has to ask for disk access.
Yep.
And so it's what it's doing is it's moving lots of things that we used to think of as Mac App Store features or, you know, whatever limitations, and just pushing them into the system by default. And you can say yes, and there are places where you can override, although it's not easy. And that's actually my, if I ever do write something about this, and we'll see, it's a beta, who knows, maybe things will change. But if I ever do write something of this, one of my points is going to be also that I feel like they crossed a line, at least in these betas, where they're asking for your system is becoming an impediment to you and judging you. And right. I think it's gone too far where, like, I think Apple has actually built user hostile patterns into the system as a way to scare people into not using software that has not gone through Apple's approval process, that's what notarization is. It's an approval process. There's actually scanning that happens, you know, and if Apple doesn't give you a notarized thing, you are going to get, when your app launches, or you choose not to go through their system, you'll get a scary dialogue box when people try to open it that says, I can't, it uses the word malware. It's like, I can't scan this for malware, so you can't open it. And it doesn't tell you what to do to open it either, although you can open it by going to system preferences. So I'd say it's a really kind of user hostile pattern where they're trying to do the right thing, but they're also, in the background, what they're really trying to do is discourage you from using any software that isn't through Apple's processes, and shame the developer, because that dialogue box also says, this is the fault of the person who wrote this app. Contact them, which is like doubly bad, I think. And it's one of those things that as a power user, I can learn to get around it, but it still puts up a lot of barriers in my way. And there in no place that I can find in the UI is there a way for me to say, you know what, stop. can't do it.
Well, and that's it's always one of those interesting discrepancies too, right? Because it's like, you think about, well, so obviously stuff's been getting increasingly locked down for a while, ever since basically the Mac App Store came out.
Sure.
And even Mojave, I believe, like, there's no longer like an open any source, right? It's App Store You can allow apps downloaded from App Store and identified developers in the system control panel, but you can override that on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah, you can no longer set... not only is it not set by default, you can no longer choose as a user allow all apps. The right. only choices are App Store or App Store and identified developers.
Right. And so the notarization process being added in Catalina takes that a step further. You know, it's based on the same idea, but it seems like they've locked it down even more.
Yes.
And I, you know, this is a thing obviously that a lot of people worried about with the coming from iOS, right? Is that the Apple would eventually enact the same sort of restrictions on the Mac
OS yeah.
that it did on iOS. And this is still not quite there, right? You can still get
yes.
and run programs. It's just become harder and harder. And I think, you know, from Apple's perspective, I'm sure they think to themselves, well, most Mac users just probably get everything from the Mac App Store. Like, anyway, which yeah. is not, you know, percentage-wise, probably true. There are probably a yeah. lot more users who are overwhelmingly using Mac App Store apps.
Yeah, but, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a... But there's also a percentage of people who not only use non-Mac App Store apps, but also predominantly, perhaps, rely on those. And so they will be people like you, people like me, like many of our friends and many of our listeners.
Even like pro, quote-unquote, the pro-user community that they're supposedly so understanding of. Now.
Right. It's not only that we get hit by it. It's that we get hit disproportionately by
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
And I think that's tricky because those are also the people yeah. who are very vocal about
things. I want Apple to lock down the Mac by default because I want a random person who doesn't know much about technology, including like my kids, to find it hard to go and do dangerous things on their computer. Like, they can still do them, but they have to, like, know, oh, boy, I got to do all these processes, and I'm subverting what Apple's doing, and it's warning me. Okay, fair enough. My problem is, what about everybody else? And
right.
the larger problem is also, if you do too many of these dialogues, and Microsoft learned this lesson... people just start clicking OK.
Right.
Or they start clicking no, and all their apps break in incredibly weird ways, and it's up to all the developers to try and walk them through how to get them to work again. Neither of which is really a great scenario. So I don't deny that. Well, I will say this. This is Apple exerting control, and when we say Apple's not forcing everything into the Mac App Store, it's not necessarily any... reason to celebrate, because what's really happened is the Mac App Store hasn't taken off like Apple wanted, and so instead Apple has exported rules of the Mac App Store into the OS in general and forced right. people outside of the Mac App Store who do software to register as developers and to run their apps before distribution through Apple approval systems. So basically it's approval automated, but it's the notarization is an approval process by Apple that must happen before your app can run by default on Mac. So they've exported the control outside the App Store. So it's sideloading of a sort, and you can get around it. You can ignore it if you want to, but it's still doing that, exerting that level of control. And they're doing it, you know, they're doing it for reasons that in this modern era, there's really an argument to be made that the old style kind of open computing systems are not safe at all. And mm-hmm. and that you need to be more locked down like iOS is. And again, by default, I'm kind of okay with that. But what I'm not okay with is my Mac all of a sudden, as somebody who's been using a Mac a long time, my Mac saying, I judge you for launching that app. I think you shouldn't launch that app. Or I mean, in one case, I launched Logic, Apple's own app, and it said Logic would like access to the desktop. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And again, maybe that's a bug. Maybe that's something that goes away in an app update for Catalina. But it's one of those things that's like, every app is going to ask me if it can look on my desktop for stuff. Like, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. And maybe it's because they're badly written and they need to be updated to never assume disk access unless the user prompts them. But it's so frustrating.
I have to just a brief toot of my own horn on this one, but this reminds me of a scene from my upcoming book. There's a line that always makes me laugh a little bit when I read it. It's where there's a there's one of the main characters is in a certain amount of peril, and he's trying to do something that a computer system will not let him do. And he just thinks to himself, the safety system is going to kill me.
Yeah.
And I just think it's exactly what it makes me think of in this scenario, which is like, yeah, these systems that are here for, ostensibly for our protection are actually going to do more damage. And there are, I hesitate to draw the comparison between a very prominent news story in which something like that has happened, but, you know, certainly the problems Boeing was dealing with their safety systems. Mm-hmm. You know, there is a point in which you can overdo that, right? Where you can try to predict user behavior in a specific way. And unless you make it very clear what that system does and how it works, you can actually be causing problems because you are potentially fighting against the way that people think the system works or have always known it to work.
Yeah. So there are a lot of smart people at Apple working on this stuff. And I have no doubt that they are deeply concerned about the security of Mac users. And I think that's great. My concern is that the people who are worried about security have the upper hand on the people who are worried about the user experience. And, you know, the short version of this is, and that I may or may not have said to somebody who works at Apple yesterday, is I feel like Apple can do better than this. Like, that's the bottom line, is I feel like Apple could do better. I get, and this is the crux of most of the arguments that I've heard who say this isn't a problem from people, random people on Twitter. And it happens a lot where people are like, well, what do you want Apple to do? They need to be secure. And it's amazing, I've said this before, I'll say it again. It's amazing how many people who think that Apple can do no wrong also think that Apple is unable to solve problems. Yeah. It's an amazing combination that these people think that Apple can never be criticized and that everything they do is great, but Apple is completely incapable of solving a naughty user interface technology problem. Oh no, they can't do that. What do you want them to do?
The answer is find a way around it.
I want them to be Apple and be good at this and find a really appropriate way to provide the security that does not involve the death by a thousand cuts of all of these pop-ups that remind people of Windows Vista, because that's not good enough and Apple needs to do a better job. And maybe Apple needs to recognize that there are different types of users, and that if you're one of their pro users or something. I wrote a piece about this. Gruber mentioned this the other day. It's the idea of a developer mode, which I got from Chrome OS. The idea that there's a mode you can go into and a lot of this stuff just goes away. And it's like, yep, you're taking your life into your own hands, but I'm okay with that because I got to run all this stuff that is weird stuff and you are in my way. Or is it, because I know they're balancing, like, if you give people a, hey, this app is super dangerous and may destroy your system, okay, or launch the app anyway, people are going to be like, launch the app anyway, right? So you don't want to make it that easy. But at the same time, you need to find a way to let this stuff actually run for the people who know that they want to run it. And I get that that's really hard. The truth is, if there's ever a way to bypass it, the installers of some creepy malware are just going to write a page or like some really bad utility that spies on your data that my kids download when they're trying to download a game. They're going to have an instruction manual, right? Where they're like, well, here's what you do. You go to System Preferences and you turn this off and you put in your password. And it's like, okay, well, yeah, you know, people who really want to mess up their systems are going to. So what you really want to do is deter the people who don't know better, but you can't do that at the expense of the people who do know better. And that's, I get that that's a hard problem. But I feel like my concern here is that the security people are doing their job, but they're not the interests of security. I don't even want to, I don't know how Apple is structured internally about this. It feels to me like security is being considered and the user story is bad. And it's somebody's job to say this is not a good enough user experience, especially because this will hit people when they upgrade. The moment they upgrade to Catalina, all their 32-bit apps will die. And all their apps that have not been updated to take advantage of Catalina will start throwing all of these warnings at them. And I think it is in Apple's best interest to make upgrades as painless as possible. And this is going to be painful. It's going to be painful if it goes like it's going. So I don't know. That's my rant. We'll see what happens. I might write something about it. I might not. I don't know. I don't know how much of this is because of the beta. That's the my my challenge here is, do I sound an alarm now with the hopes that it makes enough trouble that Apple course corrects? Because, you know, sometimes making a stink in the summer will get the attention of somebody at Apple. Or, and it never goes, I'll put it this way, it never goes like, oh, that Jason has some good ideas, let's do what he says. What happens is there's somebody who's fighting for this internally who will look at something I write and say, see, I told you. And it, right. And it helps their argument have a little more weight. Exactly right. So, you know, so I'm on the fence about it because I don't want to rail about something that's just a bug in the beta and it's going to be better and they know it and they're working on it. At the same time, I really don't want this to be ship as it is in the fall because it's going to be bad.
Yep. Wow. Girl. Hopefully this is part of the process, but yeah, it's always worrying because you don't know. You don't know until you check another beta,
right?
Or maybe even the final version, whether or not any of your thoughts have been heard.
And so often I hear like, oh, no, they got it. It'll be fixed in the final. And it's not fixed in the final.
Yep. And who knows, then in a point release, right, they might, after all that hue and cry of everybody dealing with the transition,
yeah,
possible they'll come out in a 0.1 or a 0.2 and be like, eh, we've dialed it back a little bit. You know? Like, that's,
I mean, maybe it is bugs. Like, the truth is, maybe all of these Logic wants to see your desktop. It's like, oh, yeah, that shouldn't be happening. Great. But I'm really concerned that the moment I upgraded, because what happened is I upgraded to Catalina on my existing system instead of just the pristine install, which meant all my apps that I use every day are on there. And in the first 4 hours I'm using it, every single one of them is triggering a whole cavalcade of permission requests.
Right.
And it's not good. And I'm, yep. and then it settles down, and then you launch an app and you forget about it, and then you launch an app you haven't launched yet, and you're like, oh no. Or you install an app update. That's what got me on Saturday, actually, for D&D, is that there was an update to the streaming software I use. I was like, all right, well, I'll install that update. But there's a line dividing when things have to be notarized. And it's like an app built after June something or other has to be notarized or it triggers this. And so the old version didn't. It launched fine. The new version was built after that deadline. It doesn't launch. I was like, oh, I just updated to an app that Apple refuses to launch. Great.
Awesome.
That's great. So, and it turns out, although I tried it and it didn't seem to work, it does seem to be that if you do the control click, choose open from the menu thing, it gives you an alert, but it still opens it. So I think that shortcut actually is there. It looked like it wasn't there because when I did it, it triggered the alert basically saying this could have malware in it because Apple didn't approve it, which again, I don't really like the way that's worded, but I think it did actually open in the background. So there are some shortcuts that are apparently still there. I took it to heart when at WWDC in the session that I was in about this, somebody stood on stage representing Apple and said, we're not going to prevent you from launching software you want to launch. Bottom line, like, we will, you, if you want to launch arbitrary software on your Mac, you will be able to do it. I didn't realize quite how many barriers were going to stand in between you and doing that, though.
So. I mean, that's classic politician promise there, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, everything they said was absolutely true. They just didn't
from a certain point of view.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, Obi Jason.
Yeah, you're welcome. Obi Dan. That one works better. That scans better.
That does Obi-Dan. Work better. It's true.
All right, well, you get on out of here, you. Go travel the world and stuff.
Adios. Another continent.
Yes.
Not that one. That
Adios
will not be helpful.
To
Adios.
Northern Europe. Okay.
Well, you know, I went to Mexico for my last trip, so
That's
I'm always
true.
One trip behind is the problem.
I see. Well, I look forward to speaking various Gaelic languages with you. And anyway, have a wonderful honeymoon to you and your wife.
Thank you very much.
I hope you have a great time. And then we will catch up sometime when you're back in the States, or maybe when you're on a phone and
on the streets
Ireland, of Dublin.
Maybe. Yeah, could be.
At the end when you're at Worldcon, which is not the honeymoon. It's the post-honeymoon science fiction convention, you know?
Yeah, the recovery. Yeah.
It's Dan Moore in life.
Yep.
You're living your best life.
I'm trying.
Yep. All right. Well, have a great time. I'm sure everybody here... shares that sentiment, everybody listening. And until we talk again, whenever that is, bye, Dan.
Ciao, Jason.
Adios.